Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The People's Republic of China, non-transparent, geopolitically non-transparent, and it comes to private enterprise non-transparent. But what matters is investing in the Chinese markets. I welcome Josh Rogan, writes global opinions for The Washington Post, and a recent decision was celebrated in some quarters because it appeared that the U.S. had found a compromise to permit Chinese companies to remain listed in New York and other world enterprises, but especially in New York, so that American investors can take the risk. I mean big companies. I don't mean small, you've never heard of companies. Josh, a very good evening to you. The compromise is celebrated, and as I understand it, involves Hong Kong. How does it work? What are the metrics that need to be satisfied to continue to Chinese stocks in America? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John. Well, for over a decade, Chinese companies have had this special privilege when raising money on U.S. stock exchanges and in U.S. capital markets. They weren't bound by the basic laws and regulations that apply to companies from every single other country in the world, namely that when they submit their audits, their disclosures, the way that we know that they did the business they say they did, there was no way to check on those audits because they were held in China. They still are held in China, and the Chinese government wouldn't let U.S. regulators or U.S. inspectors at them. And for over a decade, this practice has gone unaddressed. And for over a decade, these massive conglomerates, we're talking about China's biggest oil energy company, we're talking about state-owned enterprises, Alibaba, have taken hundreds of billions of dollars of U.S. investor money. And sometimes it doesn't work out so well because, as it turns out, these Chinese companies are often ridden with fraud. And even when they're not ridden with fraud, they work at the behest and influence and under the control of the Chinese government, which likes to take Americans' money and use it to build up the Chinese military or to commit mass atrocities against Uyghurs. So for over a decade, there's just been this problem between Wall Street and Chinese companies that no one ever solved, no one ever addressed. So it's natural that when they announced the agreement last Friday, a lot of people thought that was a really good thing. And the agreement is, as you described, now U.S. inspectors will be able to go to Hong Kong for now, supposedly because of COVID. They can't go to the whole country and take a look at the books, the audits of all of these major Chinese companies. The problem is that the Chinese government has no record of actually showing full transparency of the companies it controls, quite the opposite. And, you know, what a lot of people on Capitol Hill and a lot around Washington think is that this agreement is just China's way of delaying getting all their companies kicked off of the U.S. exchanges because they still want to take more money without any regulation. So by striking this agreement, they've just been able to kick their punishment down the road. And that just makes the problem fester more.
I'm struck by the companies who have already delisted themselves without intervention by the U.S. government. The China Life Insurance, very big. PetroChina, Sinopec. Don't I remember Sinopec being a purchaser of, I think it was Canadian technology. I don't remember. It was a while back. But these are state-dominated companies, Aluminum Corporation of China, Sinopec Petrochemical. So the fact that they've left voluntarily, does that indicate that the rest are going to leave voluntarily once the auditors catch up with them?
That might very well be the case. What's going on here is that, you know, as U.S. China tensions rise and as U.S. markets become less hospitable for Chinese companies, China has its own strategy. And Xi Jinping wants to bring these companies home. They've taken a ton of American investor cash already. And now he wants to build up their domestic markets and insulate them from our laws and our sanctions and our interference. And so some of them are jumping ahead of the new regulations and taking the money with them. Some of them will get pushed off later. And eventually what we're looking at is a broad financial decoupling between the two, the world's two biggest economies, which is a very, very big deal. And how that happens and how quickly that happens and all the twists and turns are really important for the hundreds of millions of Americans who find that their investments have been placed in these Chinese companies by Wall Street. And that's the real story here, is that the reason that this scheme has been able to survive for so long, where Chinese government run companies take Americans' money and don't disclose the risks or what they're doing with the money, is because Wall Street has allowed it, because they're getting paid on both sides of the Pacific. And the Wall Street firms are trying to keep the status quo. They want to keep our financial markets integrated. That's how they make money on, again, on both sides in both countries. But the national security community and Congress are putting a stop to it for a very sensible reason, because the longer you allow these Chinese companies to operate outside of U.S. law, all that does is undermine the integrity of our markets. Again, they're using our money to commit atrocities and to build the companies that are building the military that's pointed at us. So at some point, we're going to have to turn off the spigot. And Wall Street firms are resisting that even to this day.
There is clearly an indication of military-civil relations when it comes to space. And you cite that there's also evidence of that when it comes to non-space activities in China. What is the mood of Congress about this? Are they committed, or are there still going to be leaks of the ability to invest in these military civil enterprises?
Well, Congress is not a monolith either. You still have big parts of the Washington establishment who are, again, trying to preserve the status quo of deep financial market integration between the U.S. and China. And they're represented by lobbying firms and law firms and consulting firms and think tanks and the lawmakers that they're paying. And a lot of those lawmakers sit on like banking and finance committees. But over on the national security committees and the intelligence committees, it's a totally different story, because they understand, and I agree with this view, by the way, that this is actually a threat to our economic security and therefore our national security, because we can't have a system where the Chinese Communist Party, first of all, takes control over all of its own companies and then uses them to take Americans' money and bring it back to China to build the economic and military weapon that means us harm, that is pointed against us. And so it's a tension between protecting ourselves and not decoupling in a way that is going to damage our economy so much that we end up biting off our nose to spite our face. And that's a very complicated set of factors. But the bottom line is that the trend is going in one direction, and that's down. And that's not because China hawks in Washington want a new Cold War with the Chinese government. It's because in Beijing, they've decided to nationalize everything, onshore everything, and militarize everything. And that's what military civil fusion is. There is no real distinction between a Chinese corporation and a Chinese state-owned corporation anymore. That's the way they want it. So that's the way they get it.
For some time, it's been a mystery to me, Josh. Americans wouldn't buy a company that is non-transparent. They just wouldn't do it. They want to see what the board is. They want to see those quarterly results. They want full edits, and they want the edits backed up, all of that. And yet it's been strange to invest in China. What was the explanation for these men and women who control these large funds have duties to their investor class? What did they say to get away with this?
Well, that's right. You know, if most Americans knew that their pensions and their savings were being invested in Chinese companies that build missiles, that build concentration camps, that build the cameras that sit atop the concentration camp walls, they would be very angry about it. But the reason most Americans don't know about it is because the Wall Street firms like BlackRock and Blackstone and Goldman Sachs and FTSE Russell and Bloomberg Barclays and Chase, JP Morgan, and all the rest of them are actively increasing their holdings of Chinese companies and therefore taking on more risk because they're getting something on the other side. They're bargaining for access to the lucrative Chinese market where they want to do business, where they see their growth. That's the essence of the corruption, is that these Wall Street firms are acting in the interest of themselves, not of the people's money who they're managing. And they're trying to steer politics away from the threat to tell everybody to go back to sleep so that they could continue this scam until the point where they've prostrated themselves to the Chinese Communist Party sufficiently that they're allowed to do business inside China, at least until the next quarterly earnings report.
The first big test is going to be in Hong Kong. Is there a date certain? When does it have to be done? The first audit, a review?
Right. So the new agreement, I predict, will unravel by the end of the year. And here's how I think it's going to go. In mid-September, the auditors are going to first auditors from the U.S. government are going to go to Hong Kong. They're going to commit a bunch of start a bunch of inspections. And if there's even one instance of the Chinese government interfering, then they will be forced to certify publicly to Congress under the law that China is not compliant with the laws of the United States when it comes to capital market disclosure. And when that happens, again, sort of by the end of the year, give or take, 200 Chinese companies valued at $1.3 trillion will be one step closer to being thrown out of our markets. Now, it won't happen right away. The timeline for that is 2024. Some Congress lawmakers want to speed that up to 2023. But in the end, unless the Chinese government suddenly decides to completely change its character and its strategy and open up the books on all of its companies, which isn't likely, then we're heading in one direction. And that direction is more decoupling and the end of Chinese large state-owned and state-connected corporations in American markets. And I say good riddance.
Also, the People's Republic of China and the most recently ballyhooed CHIPS Act, sponsored by Senator Young of Indiana, Senator Schumer of New York, celebrated and passed easily 64 votes in the Senate. But there's a detail here that's important. Josh, some senators have said this is a slush fund, but what you've identified in a column is that this does nothing about U.S. firms, U.S. fab-making firms, big industry, investing in Chinese fab outfits at the same time. How does it work? How are they getting around this?
Right. Well, after 2 years of a torturous legislative process, the Congress passed the law that they could pass, the one that could get 64 votes in this environment, which is essentially $74 billion worth of grants and loans and tax breaks for very profitable, already profitable companies that make all of these chips, all of these semiconductors.
Such as Intel, the biggest.
Yeah, some are American, right. Like Intel, some are South Korean. You know, the Taiwanese are going to get some of that, the company is going to get some of that loot. But the idea is for them to build manufacturing in the United States. So, okay, fine, that's well and good. But the problem, the glaring problem that you pointed out is that they are free to take another set of $74 billion, let's say, and build the similar enterprise inside China, which means they haven't really increased the U.S. competitiveness at all. They've just sort of taken the money in the front door and then they can spend it out the back door because money is fungible. Because when you give a company $10 billion, you can't tell them exactly what to do with it unless that's in the law, and it's not in the law. So the CHIPS Act, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't think it certainly probably were better uses for $74 billion of taxpayer money. But without safeguards and without guardrails and without consequences for companies that do the wrong thing, all it does is sort of fuel an arms race in semiconductors on both sides. And, you know, that's what's about to happen.
There is a detail, I believe, that it is not in the bill. It seemed very attractive. Something to do with that efforting visas for people to get out of Hong Kong. Why didn't that go through? What was the objection to that? Hong Kong is trapped.
Right. In order to get the deal done before the recess and before the Congress turns over, they dropped everything that wasn't really related to semiconductors. There's some research money, but that's not really actual money. That's just authorized money. It's like a promise of money. And all of the policy stuff got dropped. That was stuff that was going to help the Uyghurs, the Taiwanese, the Hong Kongers, you name it. And that's just because, you know, in this political environment, Republicans see any increase in visas as a break in their zero tolerance policy for new immigration. It's really as simple as that. But we used to live in a time where Republicans and Democrats could agree that brain draining communist regimes was a good thing, that when people want to flee from China or Hong Kong or Russia and they have advanced skills and then they want to bring them to our economy, that we should take them. That used to be the consensus in Washington, but not anymore.
Josh Rogan writes global opinions for The Washington Post. And when we come back, his exchange with the People's Republic of China's ambassador to the United States is revelatory of what Darkness at Noon, for example, or 1984, some of the famous books about dystopian catastrophes in the 20th century are still with us. I'm John Batchelor.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed, or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.